and it's KVC Arts Now on KVCR, Arts and Entertainment, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming, welcoming Nathan Gonzalez. Nathan, thank you so much for joining me for this.
Thank you so much for the invitation, David.
Oh, absolutely. And what I'm doing is I'm looking at libraries around the region, really due to the fact that so many these days go beyond being a place to just, you know, check out books, as we all grew up with, and maybe story time with the kids. Many are offering programs of various kinds. There's lecture series, music, and the A.K. Smiley Library in Redlands so often catches my eye with some sort of cool event going on or maybe having just passed. Beyond the programs, this library has really an incredible history behind it. And with that said, before we go into the library itself, a little bit about you with regard to the library, the Lincoln Memorial Shrine, and your background as well. I mean, you've been with the library, or the city of Redlands, perhaps I should say, 22 years now?
25. Which is very difficult for me to believe.
And so as historian, archivist, curator, what is your function at the library?
Well, my role right now is to serve as the archivist and head of special collections. So the division in which I work coordinates all of the kind of history functions related to the library, the Lincoln Memorial Shrine, and the soon-to-be Museum of Redlands.
Soon-to-be? Oh, that's right. Yes. I really didn't know that that was connected. So are you able to talk about any of that, or is it all to be unveiled at a later date?
Oh, this is a project that we've been doing for 24 of my 25 years. So yeah, it's easy to talk about. It's also a project about which I'm very passionate.
Nice. Well, let's hear more about the museum coming up. I drive by it not quite daily, but quite often, and it's an area under construction. It's a soon-to-be Museum of Redlands.
Yeah, we started out calling it Redlands Historical Museum. Then as we went into the design process, realized we needed to be more broad than just something called Redlands Historical Museum, and that actually was kind of an unsexy name anyway. And the suggestion was made to just call it Museum of Redlands. And we thought, that is outstanding. And interestingly, in subsequent period of time, Riverside has decided that they want to do the same thing with their museum. So they are also rebranding as Museum of Riverside.
Okay, just plain and simple then. What do you do as an archivist with the library?
Archives and archivists deal largely with the written and photographic, printed kind of record. Now, of course, we've moved into a lot of electronic media as well, since so many things now are created in a born digital environment. But really what we do is serve as stewards for the people of Redlands, because we are a city department, to make sure that these really important materials, which help us understand who we are as a community, can be preserved as long as possible, and they are made available to any member of the public who wants to come in to conduct research. Someone could come in and they're interested in the history of their home, for example. So we might have records that will help them understand who lived there, you know, when it was built, those kinds of things. Or we might have someone who's coming in with a school project. You know, we get a lot of elementary school kids who are interested in learning more. Redlands has an outstanding fourth grade history tour program that's done by a group called Smiley Heritage Tours. So we serve as a resource for that as well. And archives, we also do, at least in Redlands, a lot of public engagement kinds of things. So we go out regularly to different service clubs or organizations that are interested in learning more about the history of the community in our region and help to cultivate a sense of civic identity through history.
Okay, wow, nicely put. And you also overseen the library's Lincoln Memorial Shrine Museum's budget and personnel and volunteer programs. We'll get to the shrine in a little bit, but you almost gave me just the perfect segue, just talking about the people and the place and the history here. So let's go to A.K. Smiley Public Library. And to do that, since the library is really only about 3 years younger than the city of Redlands itself, let's start by talking about just who the Smiley brothers were.
Sure. Albert and Alfred Smiley were identical twins who were born in 1828 in Maine. And they're part of a Quaker family, very well educated. Their siblings were also educated, including their sisters, which in the middle of the 19th century was not that common, but it was very important in Quakerism for education. And the two twins each went into serving as educators. That was their prime profession, including Albert Smiley serving as the headmaster at what became known as the Moses Brown School in Providence, Rhode Island. And it started out as the Friends School, so another Quaker school. And he had done really well, and he and his wife worked well in the Providence community. But he was having, I think, some challenges with work-life balance, I think we would call it today, right? And no one wants to end up with a nervous breakdown, I think. So his brother suggested that maybe what he needed to do was take some time off and maybe become a farmer in the Hudson Valley region of New York. So they bought a farm, realized that that is not a vocation for the weak of heart. And certainly if you want to relax, you don't become a farmer because, you know, the cows need to be milked at a particular time and the pigs need to be slopped and you have to plant your crops and all of the other things that go along with being a farmer. So they decided that was probably not the best choice. But eventually his brother, and it's interesting that Alfred often was kind of an instigator and would bring then his brother Albert into it, and then the two of them together would do great things. So his brother Alfred came across on a picnic one day this small glacier-formed lake in New York called Mohonk Lake and said, this is a fabulous place. Talked to an owner of a tavern there who revealed that it was actually for sale when asked. And Alfred went then to his brother and said, you know what? This place is pretty special. It's for sale. You really should think about buying it. So they went up. He saw it. They realized in 1869 that this was a good place for rest and relaxation, purchased it, and the next year the Mohonk Mountain House opened to guests. In part, I think, because suddenly when you have a beautiful place like this, everyone wants to visit you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yeah.
They all kind of want to do it, I think, for free. So if you turn it into a hotel operation, then everyone can still come who is in your circle, but now they can help support it themselves.
Yeah.
Well, it turned out that it was an incredible opportunity because this mountain house grew from 12 rooms in 1870 to massive, several hundred rooms. I think today it's like 276 rooms, and that's because they've had to replace some for elevator shafts and things like that over the years.
Wow.
It's still in the operation of the Smiley family,
which
is pretty remarkable. But it was that gave Albert Smiley the leverage to be able to come to Southern California to spend his winters. The twins each had resorts in the Shangam Range of New York, which sits just above New Paltz. There's a SUNY New Paltz campus, if anyone's familiar with the State University of New York. At any rate, the mountain houses were closed in the wintertime because we didn't really have winter sports like we think about them today. So they didn't have people coming to stay during the winters. So they would close up the houses. That's when all the major maintenance would happen. Mm. Expansions were constructed. And they were looking for a place to retire for the winters. I have never lived in an environment where it snows regularly during the wintertime. I was born and raised in Southern California.
Okay.
And so my idea of winter is, 72 degrees and a little balmy and the sun is shining. And
hail in Yucaipa or something.
Yeah. Well, anymore, okay. Right? I kind of joke with people on tours at the library when I'm trying to explain why people came to Southern California in the 19th century. I say, my idea of winter is being able to be at the library and look across the San Bernardino Valley at the majesty of the San Bernardino Mountains capped with snow and think, isn't that beautiful? And know that that's exactly as close as I ever need to be to snow.
Yeah.
Well, that's why so many people came. So if you lived in a region that had more severe than Southern California does, winters, and you had the means, then you could go somewhere where it wasn't like that. And so many people in the late 19th and early 20th century came to California for that very reason. Another friend of mine jokes that his dad decided to move to Southern California from Colorado for three reasons: January, February, and March. So that's why the Smileys ended up coming to Southern California. And of course, anyone who travels brings their experience and their values with them. And their values as educators led them to, in this fledgling community, Redlands had only voted to incorporate in late 1888. So it was a very young community when they got here in 1889. And in 1893, they started working on creating a public library with other leading citizens at the time who believed that education was an important opportunity for anyone who wanted it. This is part of the public library movement, right? So the idea is that anyone who wants to have the opportunity to better themselves should have that opportunity made available to them.
Gotcha.
And they strongly believed that. So 1894 is when the initial Redlands Public Library was formed and given to the city. Because the Smileys and others had pushed for this, Alfred Smiley becomes the founding president of the Board of Trustees. And then it's only a few years later that his brother Albert is able to give a library building and park to the people of Redlands for a public library.
Wasn't it actually a few reading rooms first before we even got to the library stage of it?
Yeah, pretty early on, the YMCA was created in Redlands. Yeah, 1887 is when the Y formed in Redlands. So it was before Redlands was a city.
Wow, yeah.
It's actually the first charity in the community.
Mm.
So that's where the first reading room really began. But it wasn't until then, the early 1890s, that the idea of having an actual public library that was part of the city government structure came into being. That was in February of 1894.
Okay. Now, you mentioned something earlier about, I don't know if it was one of the Smiley brothers or maybe the Lugo family or somebody from that period in Redlands history, let's say, but they were trying to sell parcels to the city. And there, I think the selling point was summer temperatures with a winter view. And that's exactly what it was. And ever since we've lived here, for the first, I don't know how many Christmases, I would just go out there wearing just a pair of cutoffs, be comfortable enough to be doing that, but take a picture of the snow-covered mountains. There are a lot of things around town, then, that are named for the Smiley brothers. Which one is AK, by the way? Because both the brothers, I was trying to guess it, but both started with an A, so no help there.
Yeah, it can be very confusing, and especially when you're looking at identical twins.
Yeah.
Trying to identify who is who can be a little bit challenging. So Albert Smiley, it's Albert Keith Smiley, okay. So he's the AK, okay. And Alfred is Alfred Homans, H-O-M-A-N-S, Smiley, so he's the A-H. And it was interesting, we were looking at a whole bunch of photos, and they're very often photographed together. I understand that identical twins often have very, very close relationships, and this would certainly be true of these twins. There was only about a year and a half period that they ever lived more than a few miles apart.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The entire rest of their lives, they were basically within a few miles of each other until Alfred's death in 1903. But we were looking at these photographs of them, and suddenly someone realized that physically, Alfred had one eyebrow that was always curved up a little.
Oh.
Different than the other three eyebrows of the four between them. So now anytime we look at a picture of the two of them, we know, there's Alfred, because he's the one who has the funky eyebrow.
I'm looking at a picture right now, and I know which one. There's one with the two of them. Alfred is sitting.
Yep.
The eyebrow. Okay, now I know.
We used to talk about how one had a rectangular fob and one had an oval fob for their watches that were in their vests.
But you had to pick their pocket to
Well, it's
find
not
out.
Just that. They were actually a little mischievous. You don't look at pictures of, you know, supposed patron saints, and they ever look anything other than very stoic and thoughtful and all of that. But they actually had senses of humor, and occasionally, just for fun, would switch their fobs to confuse people.
I'm seeing that now as well, that their fobs are visible, just sticking out from underneath their coats.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's funny. And it'd be great if they just switched it for this photo itself. Now that we have evidence, it's the other one.
For a while, Alfred was working as a teacher. This is in that 18-month period that they were separated.
Mm-hmm.
He was working as a teacher in Iowa, and his brother Albert came to visit, but no one in the town knew that he had a twin. So Alfred went in and got his hair cut. And then a couple hours later, Albert went in to get his haircut, and the poor barber had no idea what was going on. And eventually, the two of them had to ride together in a carriage through town so that people would see that, yes, there were actually two.
That is just great. And of course, they didn't tell the barber what was going on, or surely.
I mean, not initially.
Because they had that wicked sense of humor. That is great. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR. I'm David Fleming, continuing an exploration of regional libraries in conversation with Nathan Gonzalez, archivist and head of special collections for the A.K. Smiley Public Library in Redlands. Now, the library itself actually started off as a reading room almost as early as the city of Redlands itself. Nathan, how about the building in which the library sits today? A rather historic building. When did this come about?
Albert Smiley knew that the city was going to grow enough that there would come a point that the city needed a new dedicated building just for a library. And he and his brother were also both very supportive of having the opportunity for people to experience the natural environment through parks and things. So it was important to include public park as well as the public library in a similar area, because there were no downtown parks in Redlands in the 1890s. And they really believed that there should be places for people to go to be able to experience life outside of buildings.
Yeah.
In the mid-1895-ish, he started to acquire parcels of land. And, you know, you try to do that quietly if you're amassing property, because as soon as someone knows you want it, then, you know, the value tends to go up, I think.
Oh, yeah.
So he started assembling property, and by 1897, had assembled all the parcels he needed to create his park, which, if you're familiar with Redlands, it starts at roughly the intersection of Citrus Avenue and Cajon Street. And travels west across 4th Street, across Eureka Street, and then across Grant Street all the way to Parkwood. So it's a significant area. I think it's 16 acres, something like that. And it was to be dedicated forever as a public park. It can only be used for park purposes according to the deed in 1896. The library parcels were given as well with the similar kind of thing. This can only be used for public library purposes. He even did something that I don't think anyone would allow in a gift today, and that was a reversion clause, which meant that if any of the property or if the library building itself were no longer being used for the purposes for which they were given, then those properties would revert to the Smileys or to their descendants.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so...
That's quite a clause.
It is. And we have had members of the Smiley family at a period of time in the early 1970s. The city wanted to widen a street that would have taken a portion of the park. And Ruth Smiley Sanborn Drake went down and said, "We have a reversion clause, and a street is not a park purpose. So if you do this, we are going to take back the property per the reversion clause." And guess what? They did not widen that section of the street, and it is still part of Smiley Park today.
Hence the curves that you have to go through to get around this area. I knew that there was something. We had a History of Redlands kind of book. I knew that there was something about not the building being moved, but there was some sort of major construction that was halted because of this very thing. Thank you for bringing that up. I knew that that was a major part of it. So the building itself, late 1800s?
Yeah, it was finished in April of 1898. It was designed by a local architect named T.R. Griffith, okay, who then went on to work in Los Angeles and other work. He did it in a Moorish revival style, which was really unusual in the late 19th century. And it predates the Mission Revival movement in California by a number of years. So it was really an unusual structure at the time that it was completed. We've had people who talk about the Museum of Redlands somehow because we've selected a very contemporary style of architecture. People say that, oh, well, that doesn't look like Redlands. And I want to remind people that...
Which Redlands?
Well, exactly right. I just want to remind people that in 1898, when the library was finished, it didn't look like Redlands either.
Yeah.
But it is today a landmark, and Museum of Redlands will be a landmark for our generation.
Oh, that is such a good point. And that's a beautiful kind of logic, too, to throw back. That's fantastic, actually. Side note, is there any kind of prospective opening dates for the Museum of Redlands?
Of course, with any construction project, you are at the whim of supply and demand and all of those kinds of issues. If the construction schedule is able to stay on track, they're looking at, I think it was late November, completion date for the actual building construction. Okay. That's all the stuff where if you were to pick it up and turn it upside down and shake it, wouldn't fall. That's the building construction part. From that point, then, the library will assume responsibility for taking this incredible building and making it into this Museum of Redlands. We started planning exhibits for this more than a year ago. Planning continues. Our hope is to be positioned in such a way that when the building gets turned over, because it's completed on the construction side, we can begin installation. And we anticipate, and this is another one of those unknowns, we don't know exactly how long anything's going to take. We anticipate it will be somewhere between 4 and 6 months to complete all of the installation that's required for, almost 15,000 square feet of exhibition space.
Wow.
It's a substantial project with a very small staff to do all of this. But we've got plans, we're working on it, and we're confident that when we open, this is going to be an exciting moment for everyone who lives in the East Valley.
One of the coolest things when you go to the library website, which is simply akspl.org, no matter what page you get to, if I'm not mistaken, the part that remains at the top is something I think is really cool. The only admission fee is curiosity. And that's a great quote. One, do you know who's responsible for that? Or if it turns out, okay, that's another Mark Twain, who was responsible for grabbing it?
Unfortunately, it's not something for which I can take credit. I don't actually know where it came from, but we really pride ourselves in eliminating the barriers to access to education. And that's what the public library is all about.
Gotcha. It's a phenomenal slogan or just something to keep on seeing, an affirmation, if you will. Now, another part of this cool, cool library, and if a person is reading the history, they'll see, okay, well, another wing was needed, and so another Smiley brother seems to surface up and donate $12,000 for this one, and then years pass, we need another wing, and then I'm either discovering another Smiley brother, or maybe it's just the two and you can't tell because they're twins. So we keep on getting wing after wing. But now something that people can still see today, and I'm not sure when it started, so I'd love to hear about this. If you could speak about Tom Medlicott, the stained glass artist, and the phenomenal works that you can see through and through the library everywhere you go.
Tom's a great artist, and he's still working in stained glass. The first windows he did for the library, I think, were in the 1980s, and it's fun to watch how his style has changed over the last 40 years.
Oh, yeah?
He did a couple of windows in the Young Readers Room first. I should start by saying the library, at the time of its construction, included stained glass windows. And it was a stunning piece of architecture and well designed. The original windows, there was a rose window, and then there were two sets of stained glass windows that depicted four areas of learning: science, literature, music, and art.
Okay.
Four areas of learning. So those are depicted in two different sets of four windows. So same ideas, different execution.
Wow.
And those are where the stained glass tradition begins. So that's in 1898, at the very beginning.
Okay, these ones were there at the construction of the building. Okay, and then Tom comes along.
Yeah, so we've decided to continue that tradition. And Tom created, I think it's a Winnie the Pooh in 1984 in the Young Readers Room. And then over the years, we have had donors want to make their own contributions of art to the library, whether it's in actual paintings or drawing sketches or through stained glass. So Tom is the one who we've often looked to for his artistic skill in designing these windows. So there's quite a few now that we've added in the Young Readers Room, in the Heritage Room, which is where Special Collections is located. We have four different windows that depict history themes or something history related in Redlands that he's done. And then in 2012, he was commissioned to do a very large historical piece at the library as well that features the library, Mohonk Mountain House, and it was done to honor the 40-year exceptional service of the past library director, Larry Burgess.
Is that by chance the large circular one that is so prominent?
That's actually the 1898
that's
rose window.
That's the first one. Okay,
yeah.
That's that one.
Yeah.
Here's something funny that I could leave it as a side note, but I'm going to leave it in, I think. For some reason, somebody told us when we moved here all these different factoids about Redlands, and we were told that there was Tiffany glass, something to that effect, in the library. And we're like, oh, and I can't tell you how many people that we've told that by now, and I guess spreading misinformation. So as I'm getting ready for this, I do a quick Google search, and I think I put in Smiley Library Tiffany Glass. And apparently there is a Tiffany Smiley running for Congress somewhere at some point. And so I don't know if she's a descendant of the Smiley. I guess a photograph would tell us that. But anyway, that's what I found out there. So it's not Tiffany Glass. There's the stuff from the beginning, but then so much more of it came from Tom.
And there's also one large window that was created during the 1990 expansion of the library, which features the pansy flower as its theme, which was the favorite flower of the Smileys. They could grow it here, but they couldn't grow it in New York.
Oh.
We actually plant the flower bed every year in the spring in pansy flowers in their honor. At any rate, that window was designed by another local artist named Liz Christensen.
I'm looking, by the way, at one of the windows that was designed, the Winnie the Pooh one that you were speaking of. It's got Pooh sitting at the base of a tree looking up at an owl. It's just incredible work. And so I would love to, I think, go to the library now that I'm armed with this knowledge to go to some of his earliest works and see if I can see some sort of progression on a stylistic approach or something like that. That'd be interesting. Tom Medlicott, the stained glass artist for most of the stained glass pieces that you'll see in the library?
Yes, outside of the main reference area.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, now, I have to say that we often go to the library with purpose, and therefore we don't see everything there. And you know, I find it interesting, really, just to walk through the building and just see what you can find. Because I think the last time I was there with a purpose, I was revisiting nostalgia. And so I went to the kids section. I was looking for the Great Brain books and the Encyclopedia Brown books. That was my purpose in my 50s, going to the library. But anyway, there's so much there. There's an open area. You go downstairs. There's some books. That's where you'll find Duke Ellington and that kind of stuff. I think maybe I passed a coffee bar as well. And just to stay on top of all this, it's simply AKSPL, which is AK Smiley Public Library, AKSPL.org. It's simple as that. Beyond the website, there's also, what, Facebook, Instagram, perhaps?
Yeah, we're definitely present on Facebook and on Instagram. On Instagram, our handles are at a.k.smileypubliclibrary, all squished together, at Lincoln Shrine. And then for the Youth Services Instagram pages, it's at AKSPL_kids and at AKSPL_teens.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay, well, several ways then that a person can follow what's going on at the library and at different levels and different things specifically. There's a lot going on. Every time I speak to someone at whichever library so far, as I told someone else recently, I knew that there was a lot going on, but there is a lot going on. Nathan, I really appreciate your time on this. This is educational and interesting at the same time, and also a bit inspiring for, I think, a person to go into the library now and check out, oh, that stained glass. Or I think it inspires a person to go into the library now, and that's what we're hoping to do. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to share my passion.
Again, beyond all those Instagram handles and Facebook locations, a great springboard into the AK Smiley Public Library is simply akspl.org. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Full disclosure, Dr. Nathan Gonzalez is currently the chair for the San Bernardino Community College District Board of Trustees, the governing body of KVCR. Thanks again to Nathan. And here at KVCR, thanks to Rick Dulock, Sandy Hodela, Miley Palacios, Zach Mays, and Shireen Awad. For more going on in the region, you can visit our events calendar at our homepage, kvcrnews.org, or you can go directly there, kvcrnews.org/calendar. Many past KVC Arts can be found through iTunes, NPR One, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, and most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts. Behind Us Now, for example, composed and performed by Sean Longstreet. So thanks to Sean as well. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support, which you can do any time of the year, day or night. Give at kvcrnews.org/support. And thanks again.